Welcome to the third episode of DinerNet. I am co-host and co-creator Taylor Reinhardt. On today's podcast, we have guest host Ryan Priestley and guest Connor Morris, the editor of Speakeasy Magazine. We talk about journalism and its supposed death, as well as what it's like to be a leader in a student organization, and the more trivial topics like Hulk Hogan's sex tape and Air Bud. This episode was a bundle of joy. There are almost no audio problems except for all of the audio problems. We hope you enjoy this third episode of Diner Night.
Tonight's diner night, feeling all right. We'll be making omelets the whole night through.
Welcome to Diner Night. I am one of your co-hosts, Taylor Reinhardt.
This is Matt Albany dropping Whitney Houston's song released postmortem. Tonight is the night, diner night.
And your other co-host, Hannah Decorus, and our guest host tonight,
Ryan Priestley.
So, Hannah, tell us what we are going to be starting off with for our warm-up batch of stories.
Warm-up batch of stories. Warm up your hearts with stories about your mom.
Aww, mom stories.
Should I start?
You should.
All right. So, I went home last Wednesday, and my mom had told me early in the week that she had made a photo book for my sister on an online picture sharing website, Shutterfly, all rights reserved. And my sister showed me this book, and it's written in the first person, like, I am Mary Ellis Decorus, and just has pictures of her and her friends with things like LOL and cool for life and stuff like that. And it shows just everything that my sister's done in the past couple of years. And it's creepy, but my mom, it looked like it was supposed to be a nice thing. And then the last page says, I have a very blessed life. I just need to remember that sometimes. And that's how it ended. And my sister just looked at me for, like, interpretation, I guess. And I was just, I didn't know. I was just said, I'm sorry. That's all I could say.
That's all that can be said, yeah. I think. Yikes.
Very pointed. So, yeah, my mom, I don't know what's happening. She's on the fritz.
Yep. Talking about moms on the fritz, my story comes from, and this is sort of a memory that I have that's a little bit, I don't know if it's exactly correct, but when I was 7 or 8, in retrospect, my mom was out of work and we were in trouble. At the time, I was just running around with my brother playing Batman or Jedi, whatever, like we normally did. And Batman, Jedi, yes. Our guest, Connor Morris, is here before. He will be introduced. Until then, he's going to be a phantom voice in the back. she did a phone interview, and my brother and I were playing something and we were yelling, and my dad told us to be quiet at some point. I don't know how much we were told to be quiet or how much we were just like glared at, but at any rate, we didn't get the message. And so she hangs up the phone, she looks at us, and she says, I hope you're happy. And she went to the garage and shut the door, and whatever, we don't know what happened out there to this day. It's something that I completely forgot about until just this moment. My mom has always borne the financial burden, and there was a point where that had to have been very worrisome, which is not something that I generally think about. So I love you, Mom, and I'm sorry I'm too loud.
I love my mom. I mean, like, it's a very basic thing, but, like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes when you're older, it's, like, not cool to say, like, oh, yeah, my family's very happy. Like, I'm very I love my family and everything, especially my mom. My favorite thing about her, though, is that she, when I introduce people to her, they're like, oh my God, she's so quiet. She's so quiet and everything. And like, she is very, it's, I'm the same way where I'm very timid at first and everything like that. But then once you get to know her, she's a hoot and a holler or whatever. I think my favorite, like, because many people meet
I think
her,
that's how Paula Deen was described.
Yeah. A few other ways too, but hoot and a holler being one of them, I'm sure. But yeah, like my favorite thing to tell people after they meet my mom, they're like, she's so quiet. She's so cute. She's just like a little doll. I'm like, well, the one time we were playing Mario Kart on the Wii, which if you played that, it's impossible to steer. It's really difficult. You have to like actually tilt the remote.
It is absurd.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking.
It's for pros.
Okay.
It's for video game professionals.
That's
like me.
The Wii is not at all for video
game
professionals.
Everybody's Tokyo Drifting.
Yeah. Yoshio Drifting.
But yeah, the one time we were playing that and it was Rainbow Road, and halfway through the game, one of the best things about the Wii is that anybody can turn off the console. We're all playing and she was in last place. She goes, fuck that, and turns it off. She says, I'm done. And I was like, no one would get that, you know, if they just talked to my mom for the first time. Love you, Mom.
The Mario Kart story kind of reminds me of a story of my mom. She would never play video games, but the one year she like really surprised us. My brothers and I have five older brothers, and my older brothers and my dad and I always did like March Madness, like brackets and stuff like that. And then like, you know, you put money in and, you know, winner take pretty much all of it. And my mom entered the one year and beat us all. And we were all like, this is ridiculous. Like, at the time she wasn't working, and two of my brothers had to get up one of my brothers had to get up for work at like a ridiculously early hour, and my mom would already be up then. He'd put on SportsCenter in the kitchen. Then two of my brothers would get up for high school, and they'd go in and they'd watch SportsCenter again right afterwards. And then me and the youngest of my brothers would get up and go to grade school after them, and we would also watch SportsCenter. And my mom was in the kitchen the entire time, so she would watch SportsCenter three times in a row. So she would just pick up on stuff, and then she's filling out her bracket, not even not actively knowing all the things about the teams, but then we'd be watching games and she'd just be like, oh yeah, well, I mean, they got that guard he was great last year in the tournament. She's like, what are you doing? She's like, I watch 3 hours of SportsCenter every morning. Something just sinks in.
I would also like to just mention that I love my mom. I didn't get to say that. And I tell stories about my mom, and they're always the bad things that she does, and then I don't qualify it with, also, I love her so much. And then people are very offended, but I do.
Yeah, I mean...
deeply.
Well, no,
right.
I think if you can pick up on that stuff, usually it is coming from a place of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? It's a very defensive thing to be like, also, I love my mom, after, I tell a story about her going out to cry in the garage.
Yeah.
I assume she cried. Again, she might have just, destroyed shit. And I wouldn't blame her. Yeah. Hey there.
Hi.
Do you want to order?
Yeah,
order.
I think we're ready to order. Connor, are you ready?
I am not getting anything. This is Ryan, by the way.
I don't know. You should go.
I should go?
Yeah, because I'm not ready yet. This is a big decision for me.
Yeah. No, this is a big decision. Have I gotten the chicken tenders appetizer on the podcast yet? I don't think so. I will get the chicken tenders appetizer with ranch.
I didn't know we were considering precedence.
We do. We try to eat our way through the menu.
Like Super Size Me.
A lot like Super Size Me, except I am also getting very fat. Yes.
Could I just get sourdough toast? Thank you.
Hannah, Ryan, you guys getting anything?
No.
Hell no.
Okay, well, I'm going to build the suspense here. He's going to not know what he's going to order.
Because tonight,
I'm getting ready for it. I'm internalizing it. I would like a spicy chicken sandwich, please.
Wow.
Wow. Best choice I've heard out of the three.
Yeah.
Easily best choice. Better than chicken tenders, better than sourdough toast.
I had food before this.
So did I. That's why I didn't get anything.
Better than you very much. The carafe.
The carafe is back. Thank you.
It is. Oh, we've had a lot of conversations about the carafe. Well, I think it's time then to introduce our guest, who's been introducing himself for a while now at this point. So please give a warm welcome to the listening audience. Please clap in your homes as you listen to this. Connor Morris. Connor is, what do you do with Speakeasy?
I'm editor-in-chief of Speakeasy Magazine.
The editor-in-chief of Speakeasy Magazine, Connor Morris. Hello, Connor.
And I'm also really lonely.
Connor is also very lonely. Connor, do you have any stories about your mom?
My mom and my brother connected when my brother was about 7 over wrestling. Like WWE, WWF, I'm not sure what exactly it was. But this was in the 90s, so
it's WWF at the time.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you for the thank you for the input.
It's a federation, not an enterprise.
Yeah.
Such a federation.
You got to pick one.
NWO.
And so my mom and my brother were so obsessed with wrestling that they installed an intercom between the kitchen and my brother's room, and they would always just talk about it, and it was a very strange experience. I learned a lot of my foul language, just bad language habits, from my mom, because she just got so pissed off when she watched wrestling. And she'd be like,
I don't think there's any other way to watch wrestling than pissed off at. You gotta be mad at everything when you watch wrestling.
Goddamn Hulk Hogan! My mom just always had the best way of prefacing things with swear words. So,
well, so I don't know too much about wrestling, but I do know that Hulk Hogan was a hero. He was not a
not during the 90s.
Actually, oh, not during the
90s. In the 90s when he switched to WCW and became Hollywood Hulk Hogan, and he was a heel. He dyed his beard black, kept the mustache blonde. It was a very interesting look. Wore all black clothing. Black bandana.
Wow.
And he was Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
That's awesome.
Very much a bad guy.
So, Connor, how much do you know about wrestling?
Well, I know enough about wrestling to know that Hulk Hogan's a piece of shit compared to the man himself, Macho Man Randy Savage.
I'm a comedian.
R.I.P.
Oh, yeah. I'm a comedian.
R.I.P., my son. I'll meet you in the afterlife.
Have you seen the Hulk Hogan sex tape?
I didn't know that existed.
It's the funniest thing.
Is he just going, oh, yeah, the whole time?
No, I mean, it's, like, really blurry, and you can't see it, but they put subtitles of what he says, and it's not, like, Hulk Hogan in the 90s when he's, like, ripped and everything. It's Hulk Hogan, like, 2 months ago he's just fat and everything, and, like, after, like, the entire time he's just like, oh, man, I eat so much. I'm just sweating because I ate so much. And it's, like, just, like, I think afterwards he's, like, oh, I felt like I just got off a roller coaster, which you're like, okay, yeah, I guess he's like having a good time with it. But then he goes, I just feel so nauseous.
I know. Well, actually, it's funny. Professional wrestling ruins your body. Like, he's in constant pain. Like,
His legs are terrible. Like, watching.
His legs are terrible. I'm judging them right now.
I watched Hogan Knows Best for way longer than I should have. And he, like, one of the big things was, like, he tried to get back into wrestling for, like, just, like, a comeback tour thing, and he has to wear knee braces, like, basically almost at all times on both knees because he got so top-heavy because he just, like, lifted
Because he got chest implants. He got breast implants, actually.
He's so out of he's just got to wear braces.
Skip leg day. And,
his teeth are messed up from wrestling.
So bad from wrestling.
What does it say about society that wrestlers do the same things that, like, women are supposed to do, you know what I mean? Like, the ideal woman is supposed to get breast implants and shave everything and do weird, like, peacocking things.
Right. Well, wrestling is very much so about the look. That
it's about pageantry,
It's a huge, huge thing. I mean, obviously, it's fake. It's obviously theater.
Yeah, it's all about theatrics.
But
Oh, wow. Spoiler alert, guys, viewers at home, wrestling is fake.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely the pageantry. It is definitely the male body is such a huge part of it. My roommate Tyler was telling me that every single year, the wrestling president Vince McMahon ratings right around this time drop heavily, and it's because Monday Night Football comes on and wrestling has a weekly show that's on Mondays. Aww. Monday Night Raw. Every year the head writer for Raw gets fired because nobody's worked up the courage to tell Vince McMahon that Monday Night Football came back. And so he goes, why the fuck are these ratings dropping? And then he fires his head writer.
Oh my God.
I love it so much. That's such a great story.
That is.
So anyway, we can ask Connor about actual speakeasy things. Connor, what is speakeasy?
It's an alternative online news magazine, I guess, for like culture on campus. It's definitely an interesting thing to be a part of. Some of the other publications on campus, cough, ABW News Time, they just suck a lot. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just completely kidding.
You're a drunk and a liar.
Well, I guess one of the biggest things that's different with us is that we don't actually like have people apply. We just let people start writing for us. And the first draft, you know, is always like the roughest thing. It's just like, you know, like, oh, we've got a lot of work to do. but no, it's a fun experience being the leader of something like that. I don't know.
I don't really have any. So what do you feel is different about Speakeasy than other online publications on the OU campus and in Athens in general?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Not one thing.
No. It's like, I think a voice, like personal usage of voice. So I let my writers use curse words on occasion. I let them exercise the full breadth of their writing talent, and I let them explore two new ways of doing things. So it's not necessarily just writing too, it's putting interesting like structures into stories. So it's like links, it's like really good pictures, it's picture galleries, videos. So they're just telling traditional news stories in a lot more interesting way, I guess.
I feel like that's also that's the history of Speakeasy, if I'm not mistaken.
Because yeah,
I remember reading an article from you and Nikki when you guys were sophomores, I think. Who was in charge of it at that point?
Oh God, I don't even remember.
McDavis. McDavis.
He controlled everything back in those days.
Yeah. But yeah, I remember reading it, and you guys were full of foul language and fun. I've always liked that about Speakeasy.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think cursing is a natural part of the language. It's a natural part of dialect. And writing without some kind of dialect or passion is just stupid. You know, it's just not enjoyable to read.
Yeah, I would agree.
So what topics are you guys interested in? Just all of the news topics? All of them?
So cats.
Cats.
Cats on skateboards.
Yes.
Cats on, like, skateboards with jet attachments to them.
Yes.
And then also, too, sometimes you cross over into the world of dog cybernetics.
Okay.
So it's like if a dog loses a leg in some sort of unfortunate incident.
Rough life.
Yeah.
Connor just convulsed at that. That was it.
What dog says to a joke.
simple puns make me very very instantaneously aroused. Whole body was aroused. It's generally our two sections that we have the most content for is like entertainment and sports. So our sports staff is super dedicated, but also too, I don't know a thing about sports.
Yeah.
And so I always feel like I have to like acknowledge them, like, yes, a good story about that sports thing you did when that guy threw the ball and the guy missed. That was cool when you talked about
that.
And see, like I respect sports journalism a lot, but still it's not something that I know a lot about.
Yeah.
So.
Do they curse in sports journalism? Or are they like, goddamn fucking Frank Solich?
Yeah. See, the cursing comes with the kind of article it is.
Right.
So it would be like, if it was an opinion piece or a column, then yes, I think it may be okay as long as it's not gratuitous.
Pete Rose was a bitch.
Grandpa, how'd you get in?
And then our entertainment section's pretty fun too. We got a lot of dedicated writers who do stuff about Breaking Bad and just
so kind of like AB Club.
Yeah.
The AV Club is by far my favorite publication to rip off whenever I'm writing an opinion piece. Yeah. They're very fun, very pretentious. They just had an article about Breaking Bad that was like, Breaking Bad was okay at best. I was like, the most pretentious take on a pretentious show I've ever heard.
Yeah, that was hard.
Funny because their sister publication, The Onion, had before the episode an article that was like, Area Man already planning on calling the Breaking Bad finale just okay or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, boy, food.
Oh, oh, food.
Thank you.
That's
me. Thank you so much.
Do you want jelly?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Matt Albini, taking the jelly.
Thank you very much.
Important decisions.
Okay, strawberry or grape?
Matt Albini like asking strawberry.
Choose your
or
adventure.
Old person like cooking for their grandchildren. You want? You want? You want grape jelly? You want strawberry jelly? What do you want?
Grandpa, I want strawberry jelly because it looks like my eyeball.
What?
Very dark turn.
You have pink eyeballs.
Yes.
I've got a question.
Yes, I've always been this handsome.
So I'm assuming you are a journalism major?
Yeah. I'm very handsome.
You're a handsome journalism major.
Thank you.
I think it's it's a given. For those of you that are listening, I'm giving you a bit of a description. Anyways, do you think that no matter what, online media is pretty much going to be the transition, whether it's any publications going online. Do you think that is a good move, though? In terms of writing, because I feel that, you know, a lot of different styles are going to get lost in this transition.
I definitely understand, like, you being nervous about that. I think the way the internet works, though, the way that it just allows you to have so many different little veins of bullshit going off of the main mass, this awful, ugly mass that is the internet, I think traditional styles of writing, as far as print journalism, magazine journalism, it's still going to continue because the print publications that go out of business, they generally move towards the online and they take the style with them. And also too, style is it's weird because it can be like, it's not necessarily just like magazine or print or online anymore. They're all blending together so much that it's more about how you tell the story than like what the medium is.
Right. So one of the things that I've found from TV as well, like this is a big question surrounding television as well, which I know Hannah, Ryan, Matt and I all do various things where we're putting together shows or, yeah, thinking about, you know, TV. And we do a lot of that with comedy. But like the big thing is like, so Community and all of our favorite shows end up in trouble because they can't do the ratings. And it's like, oh, why can't they? And it's because a rating system is antiquated. So like the thing with journalism that's the same as that TV is we don't know how we're going to be funding. We don't know how we're going to be funding anything. We don't know how we're going to be paying journalists. We don't know how corporations are going to make money from it. And like, so basically right now it's like what's getting the most page views. Like that's the biggest danger to journalism is that so many people find it so easy to click on a Miley Cyrus article because
it's the idea of link bait, I think.
Yeah. Right, that's yeah, definitely link bait.
I had seen recently that like advertisers are starting now to shy away from like they jump to online like advertising really quick on stuff like Hulu and things like that, but now with Adblock, everybody and their mother has Adblock on their computer, and like word's getting back to them that like, hey, you're paying for all this ad space or whatever, or you're paying for, you know, your 10-second video before this YouTube clip, and then half the people that are watching it aren't seeing it because they have a pop-up blocker on their, you know, on their thing. So it's like, how else do you get money from, you know, online content besides advertising? And yeah, that's the biggest
good full circle with everybody and their mother. That's good.
Subtle there. I was hoping you catch that. Definitely intended.
Yeah,
totally. So intended.
Well, that's what I think. One of the big things is that like, yeah, you could have a stream for long, like a long story. I forget what, there's short, oh crap, there's like Is it short-term journalism or I forget the term.
Short form.
Short form. That's it. Not long short-term. Form journalism. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they said that they've seen like a lot. I don't know who they are. I was in a class one time. And they were talking about it. No, but they said that, like there's been a big decrease in like magazine stories that are in the medium length.
Feature style stories.
Okay, I'm getting there. All right, yeah. I'm just a sophomore. I'm just a baby. Okay,
little baby.
But yeah, I think that like those avenues might die out, and it's all just gonna boil down to short form type stuff with tweets and whatnot.
Yeah,
I mean there will still be a few people that do it, but can we fund people to do that?
I think you can, because. The only counter that I ever find to the idea of link bait, you know, to the idea of just posting things just to get people's views, just it doesn't even matter about the content, is to actually have really good content, to have well-reported long-form stories that are, you know, beautiful in the depth that they give the people that they're interviewing.
And there's always more to a story. There's more than a tweet. And I think that it being on the internet, you can find that for yourself. Even if it just starts with a throwaway short form piece on some website, if that interests you, then you can go very quickly to something else, and you're constantly learning.
Yeah, and that's where I always, I'm like, when people get the gloom and doom of, well, journalism's dead, I'm like, okay, no, it's not dead. But there are, like, very real problems, such as misinformation, especially in the in timeliness. Like, whenever there is a crisis, it's like, oh, you know, like, just the recent D.C. shootings, they were like, okay, there's, like, three gunmen, they're all running around D.C., and
everybody wants to be first. No one cares. Not as many people care about being right. Like, first. Especially with stuff like Twitter. Like, you see something, you're going to retweet it. You're going to take that, whatever it is, and you're going to post it onto other social media because you want to be the first one. You want to be the one to get all the likes and the upvotes because you know that everyone else is looking out for news.
And
they don't
care
if it's right. They want something. They want more information first. And then they just count
at
on the actual. And then they count on the actual, like, you know, the actual legitimate journalist to then come back later and be like,
no,
hey, that
wrong.
Was actually
but
wrong.
Even actual
right,
legitimate journalists are so fucking
they do
bad
it
at
exactly
that.
Too.
Well, and
CNN's
so think about
coverage of the Boston Marathon bombings.
Huge.
I mean, they were reporting that the police were, you know, had people in custody, and then the Boston Police Department had to come out and say, we never said that.
Yeah.
I don't know who their sources are. Like,
yeah,
they had to make official statements then that, like, nope, CNN it didn't check their sources well enough.
Right.
Like,
well, do you guys remember Wes Lowry? Is that a name that you guys remember? Wes is, do you remember Wes? Wes was the editor-in-chief for The Post when we were sophomores. And he's a very good journalist, but right now he has like 20,000 Twitter followers, and it's all because he got a job at the Boston Globe when that hit and when the Hernandez story hit, and he was outside of both locations. He was one of the journalists chasing around the bombers as they went on their tear through that Boston suburb.
Yeah.
So like Wes was very good. I don't think there was too much misinformation from him, but like what it's done for his career to have been on top of those stories and covering them well, because he was, and I think especially like you said with CNN being so bad, I think he was really good through
the
Boston
Globe
marathons.
Yeah, the Globe throughout was
right, and
that
was
definitely they had the best coverage of the most in depth, but also they weren't jumping to conclusions.
Well,
the whole 10,000
Twitter followers overnight, though, is like, yeah, Wes did it well, but like, will everyone? You know, like that's definitely a really big problem. Mm-hmm. So like, journalism isn't dead, but how do we solve that? How do we get the priority back on accuracy? I don't know.
I think a lot of it also is now it's not. Like, we're not talking about, we mentioned the Boston Globe, but we're not talking about the Boston Globe. This, we're talking about an individual person. So it definitely brings back the accountability. People can't just hide behind newspapers and giant television industries that are all owned by the same company.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's like, because the celebrity journalist was absolutely a thing. Cronkite and people like that. And yeah, we've been we've definitely moved toward that corporate, like, this is CNN. And obviously you have the faces like Anderson Cooper, the people that you see.
Beautiful face.
The beautiful faces like Anderson Cooper's. But yeah, I think that is very... Priestley's doing an Anderson Cooper. It's very distracting.
Anderson Cooper multiple times on Friday's Live, so I need to bust that out whenever he's referenced.
But yeah, so that is cool. The idea of, like, the idea of accuracy being a priority, because that will get you followers as an individual. And journalism from an individual perspective is very interesting and arguably better than, you know, the corporate idea.
Well, it's taking away, like, opinions. Well, I guess it's allowing you to have an opinion more, because it's not just the one op-ed page every day. It's people giving their opinions all the time, and be able to state what they're saying for the public. Like, comment sections are nightmares. They're absolute nightmares. Mm-hmm. But they still are the purest form of just people just spouting.
Yeah. It's definitely, it's like a stream of consciousness thing.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people don't like stream of consciousness writing because it is a lot of differing, contrasting, like contradicting opinions together and experiences together. Which is why comment sections are so fucking stupid.
This article really makes me reconsider my life. That's because you're a faggot.
That's exactly it. It's just ideologies boiled down to like a single line or two line thing. And it's, you can't get a sense of a person's self from that. But still, the way that journalism works now, the way that the internet is, there is the availability for a lot of opinions like that. There's availability for a lot of personal blogging. So you can get those idiotic opinions, but you also get people who do the same job as a journalist absolutely for free. So that's also another challenge to the traditional model of paying for content, paying for news content.
Yeah, I think it was the staff at one of the big news companies, I think it was CNN or something like that, but they ended up firing a whole bunch of photographers and camera people and stuff like that.
Their entire photography staff, they said they were going entirely to like user generated images.
Yeah, which is scary.
Was that CNN? I thought that was the,
or maybe,
Post.
That's what I said.
Was it the Washington Post?
I thought it was the Washington Post.
It might have been Washington Post. But yikes.
Yeah.
Either way, it was a big news outlet that ended up relying on just... Well, I know CNN started doing a program where it was all... And
they had that eye photo. There was more pornography on there than you would think there was.
Yeah.
It was like a story that broke that was like there were a bunch of stuff on that user eye photos that were like, oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Which is really funny.
This that's a interesting thing to think about. Speakeasy recently did a story about the Athens scanner, which really reminds me of user generated photos, because they have people send in pictures. Do you want to talk about that, Connor?
Oh yeah. Well,
were you on that story, or
it's interesting that they're actually like their own news source now. Like the Athens scanner, they talked to my writer, one of our editors. Her name's Karina Bellis. She talked to him about the story, and he said that they're moving towards like actually being a news source. Like, and they really are. I mean, they are reporting things that happen literally as they happen. They are probably the quickest way to get breaking news information in Athens currently. I can't think of anybody else that does it better and more accurately, because it's just a police scanner, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
What's silly, though, is that... And so here's a big issue. So they are people with a police scanner, and they get information off that scanner very well. And beyond that, like, obviously that's a cool thing for Athens, because generally there isn't much misinformation there. But, like, in the confusion of the Boston Marathon, there were a lot of people scanner listening then, and people would be like, there's the terrorist. Oh, wait, no, that's not the terrorist. Like, that's a huge issue. But, like, that's not to criticize the people of Athens scanner. They're great here. One of the things I can criticize them on was they decided to endorse a candidate in the student senate election.
Yeah.
I was like, you're me, all right? You're me with a police scanner. Yeah. You do not have an authoritative voice. It's like, well, listening to all of those police blotters sure gave me an idea of campus politics.
Yeah, it's like, it's not related to his to the domain that that's relating to, that the Athens scanner is relating to. Part of the idea of being a good news source is that you specialize into what, like, just specifically what you're doing. And you do it well, and you don't overstep your boundaries. You don't report on things that you don't have the credibility for.
Yeah.
and non-journalists will do that. Like, that's the big issue with non-journalists doing the news. Like, that's the, like, I'm so for, like, people bringing the news.
Citizen journalism.
Yeah, citizen journalism's great, except for the fact that citizens don't know how to be journalists. And that's fine. Like, what I think
there's
we should do.
There's a certain filter there.
Yeah. What I think we should do is we should have more, like, media literacy classes in high schools, like, these mandatory classes, because the media affects us all so much, whether it be, you know, just regular journalism and how stories are portrayed, or like representation issues with, like, you know, I know Hannah's taking a feminism class that, like, a lot of people who have never been interested in those kinds of, like, issues are finding, like, oh, the media is perpetuating this horrible thing about me. And if we had things like that in high schools, we would be able to talk about both that and about how citizens can be journalists responsibly and how the news can work.
Yeah, I think that when you bring in a personal opinion to it, it makes the feelings that you've had on your own, and you can relate those feelings out onto the world. So, and that's especially with online. If you see something and you see somebody write an article about, hey, this is a bad rep in my, okay, so this is what I study women's representation in media. But if you see an article that says, hey, this is a bad representation of a woman, then you can go and look at more representations and relate that to how you yourself feel. But if it's only a couple news sources giving it to you, then that's all that it is. It's very concrete. And next to the articles about what's happening in the Middle East are just advertisements that are objectifying women. Or the worst is when there's an advertising or there's an article about the Middle East and then there's advertisement objectifying somebody from the Middle East. It's terrifying and awful, and it happens so much, especially magazines.
We read about a case when I was a journalism major my freshman year.
We've
about
all been
where,
there.
Yeah, we were all journalism majors freshman year. But no, when they were talking about how they were talking about how, like, they had to ban commercials during news things in which they were like, breaking news, our product's great. Because, like, there were people in America who were very confused. Like, it'd be, and we'll be right back after these messages. And it cuts back to a news desk with anchors. And they're like, have you heard about Temasil? That's an Arrested Development reference. I don't, but, like, yeah, Temasil. But, like, they do it. Yeah. But they would, yeah, they would do that. Which is horrifying, which is really, really scary how advertisers will try to wiggle their way into actually being the news.
There's an issue with sponsored content in journalism right now where if it's something that's paid for by a company, it's got to be, like, clearly marked. You know, there's got to be, like, The Atlantic did some story. I'm trying to remember what it was about where they had this sponsored content. It was for Scientology is what it was. It was an article talking about how great and wonderful Scientology is. Didn't barely even, like, demarcated the fact that it was sponsored by the Church of Scientology. They paid for this. And
that's
insane. So, yeah, and so there's this big controversy. And it's literally, you cannot combine news objectivity with product placement. You can have the ads on the side. You can have the ads in the middle of the article. But it's still, in some way, relating sponsorship with the content you're promoting that's supposed to be objective. So it's a very tenuous branch to walk out on. And The Atlantic changed their policy afterwards. They have this big yellow banner now that says, like, this is sponsored content. Like, we're not objective.
You are the 1 millionth viewer. This is sponsored content.
As they sit on top of their piles of money.
Click here to claim your eternal life with Xenu.
And a free iPod Nano.
The party is here.
At the USD.
I didn't know that there was this many, like, loud people. There's only one table, really.
Athens is in rare form tonight. It's so funny. Three different girls were on the phone with, I don't know who, but they were all exclaiming, "It's homecoming week!" And I'm like, okay, cool.
Were they like a group of friends that were, they were like, let's all call somebody and yell home?
No, there were separate occasions, like at different parts of Court Street. So it's not like a individual thing. Everybody knows it's homecoming week. The world is somehow different now.
I don't know a single person who is coming back to Athens for homecoming weekend. Like, I don't personally know a single
one. Wow, what are you, like 30 or something? Old man.
But, like, that's the funny thing about homecoming to me. It's like, yeah, people, like, will... There will be a good amount of people in town, but that's such a silly reason to waste an entire week. It's like Halloween makes so much more sense to me.
Drunk.
I want them to go home. Yep. I live on Bryan, which is not a person. Bryan Hall. I live
inside of him.
I live in Bryan. And I'm napping, and I woke up because there were two people drunk at probably 2:30. And I look out my window, and they're middle-aged guys, and they're yelling back and forth, just like, Mike said he would text me and you would be here. And then the other guy is just shouting back at him like, no, he didn't. And then for like 3 minutes straight, they just went, yes, you did. No, I didn't. Back and forth. I woke up from people shouting out my window. Go
they,
home, old
they
people.
They come back to Athens and they just emotionally revert back to college.
Yeah,
age.
Maybe they weren't drunk. It was just like, ooh, it's like a bad Goosebumps novel.
You cross the Richland Bridge and there's just like a wave over you, yeah. And you just forget everything you've learned in the past 10 years.
I'm 22. Oh my God, REO Speedwagon, put it on.
I have a uncontrollable urge to turn my hat backward right now.
Do you guys remember high school homecoming?
That I don't want to remember nothing, it.
Well, not like the dance, but like just the idea of what it was. And like, so one of our friends, Mandy Hefflinger, is nominated for Homecoming Queen.
Mandy 2013.
Yeah, Mandy 2013. And we're all voting for her. I saw her in the sash today. And like, I don't know how she feels about it, but she's just like, yeah, I'm in a sash. Here we go. Like, there, it's such a weird thing in like a group of like 20,000 people to be like nominating a homecoming king and queen.
We know two of them.
Yeah, with
Joey Buccini. Do you remember him?
Cool-ass
Andrew
name.
Garfield looking motherfucker.
Right, he does look like Andrew Garfield. He's the tour guide that I told you looks like Andrew Garfield. He's a tour guide. Remember when I told you there's a guy who looks like Andrew Garfield and you were like, really? And I was like, yeah, that was him. Yep, so I found out about that. Yeah, that's
great
one
podcast.
Of the best stories that's been ever told at Diner Night.
No, I don't know if it was, I guess it was because I went to a private all-boys school, but we didn't have a homecoming for us. Like, you could only have a king, and they're not going to do two kings, because
nope.
It's Catholic school,
that's
and that's
natural.
Not natural.
That's not on
so,
the agenda.
I went to a girl that I was like talking with at the time, I went to her homecoming dance at the public school, and it was
at the
was weird
school.
Like, because I'm like sitting there and,
down to the local public school,
but like they announce, like, or they bring up the homecoming king and queen, and like I asked her, I was like, oh, so who are they? She's like, I have no idea. It's like, what, but you go to school with them? She's like, yeah, our graduating class is like 3,500 people. Yeah, I know.
Wait, 3,500 people? That doesn't sound right.
That's
350 people sounds right.
No, they had at least over 1,000. Or like a,
in the
it
entire
was at least over 1,000 per class. Maybe
what?
I think a couple thousand per class for the public school. Yeah.
I guess
no,
it was the
their,
public
like,
school.
Their whole place is like a looks like a college campus. Like a small college. Like a local university.
Okay.
Oak Hills High School. Yeah, so someone can Google the actual facts and see what the actually enrollment
I'm
is.
On it.
It's multiple thousand, Taylor. I'm telling you right now. Because
so
we
the,
barely
okay,
cracked
so
a thousand.
That's the population of students,
total.
But what about the population of animals who are involved in the athletic program? Dogs in the senior graduating class?
They had three on the track team. One did long jump, one did hurdles, and he just ran below the hurdles. He beat everybody. Because
hey, that's not a joke.
Yeah, listen.
Okay. This isn't a joke to be made.
What?
Because of seeing eye dogs.
What do you mean?
I was just trying to make an Air Bud joke. Yeah.
Right, and so I'm going to... No, this is entirely what this is. Here's the fucking thing about Air Bud 2.
All right, dog can't play. A dog can play basketball. I'm fine with it. A dog cannot play football. Air Bud 2 is
golden
football.
Receiver.
Golden receiver. Yes. Air Bud 2. Of course. The big issue with Air Bud 2 is that you can't. How do you tackle
you
a dog?
You don't tackle a dog.
Your knee has to touch the ground for you to be down in football. The dog. The only thing you do is you break all of its legs. That's the only way you tackle that dog. And that is what happened. If you remember, he goes into a pile and he gets very injured.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
He needs
I don't
cybernetic
know.
Legs.
I feel like that's
Speakeasy
more,
wrote about
that's
it.
More yeah, that's about realistic than wasn't there a baseball one too? And he swung the bat with his teeth.
He held it
like,
in his mouth and swung it, but like at least something. I mean,
you know how much that would hurt his neck.
Whoa.
There's so many, Air Buds were harmed in the making of that movie.
The only thing that matters is that the rules say that a dog can play.
in the first movie that they use a. They use an interpretation of the fact that you have to be dribbling with the ball to because he like dribbling like saliva out of his mouth is what counts.
That's such a good joke.
I haven't seen the movie in a while, but Kaz brought it up last year. Kaz Finnegan, and he said that was a plot point in it was that they used dribbling the multiple interpretations
Maybe
of the word
I'm
dribbling
not sure
to.
Well, one of my favorite Air Bud movies
a liar.
Is the one where he. It's Air Bud 5, I think, where he.
I did not get that far.
Yeah. He overcomes the emotional distance between him and his father. And
Air Bud has a dad?
Yeah, I mean, I think.
Are you sure the kid doesn't? Well, right, but like, how do they communicate that non-verbally?
I mean, have you ever seen the movie?
No, I haven't. Please tell
it's
me.
He
really
gains the ability to speak in Air Bud 4.
Does he? Well, the Air Bud puppies do gain the ability to speak.
Okay,
my sister
didn't get even that.
My
far,
sister
so.
Just watched Scare Buddies, which is the Scare Air.
Scare Bud.
Yeah, it's like Scare Buddies was the Halloween one. They're all dressed like little pumpkins. They go around. They're like, "What's going on?"
It
it's
have to
ridiculous.
Do with sports anymore?
No, it has nothing to do with sports. It's now just cute puppies doing stuff. That is where the Air Bud franchise. Franchise is gone.
Too, doing stuff.
I have no opinion of Air Bud. I was a Snow Dogs man.
Cuba.
Cuba. What happened to him? I cry every time I see Radio.
Cuba Gooding Jr. All right, look. Go on Netflix and look for any movie that shows a person holding a gun on the front of it. Cuba Gooding Jr. is in that movie. If you look at any movie made in the last like 8 years where someone is holding a pistol on the cover of the DVD, Cuba Gooding Jr. is in that movie. Or Bruce Willis are in that movie. They're both in surprising amount of straight to DVD movies that. Like 50 Cent probably has cameos into. Bruce Willis is in like four. I saw him in like four movies. He's in two different movies with 50 Cent.
What?
Where the two of them are both on the cover holding guns and looking off into the corner.
No.
Yes.
Bruce Willis agrees to some insane buddy cop movies. Or buddy gangster movies.
Yeah.
He's
no, they're
well.
Buddy cop ones. 50 Cent plays cops.
Bruce Willis is the only
guy that would be like, oh, you're 60 years old. You look good. Or, hey, that's a human... giant baby.
Right.
No. Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel's too bulky, but
yeah.
Like...
Wait, what was the... Was he in...
The Pacifier.
Oh, the Pacifier.
Giant baby Pacifier.
Oh, my God.
Well, no. Oh, no, it was The Rock that was... Okay, so actually...
Rock was
I'm,
in Tooth Fairy.
So,
I
need to explain this first before I talk about this. This is my credibility. I am an expert in Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I love him so much, and one of my favorite movies of all time is the... The one where he's the tooth fairy?
Yes. Yeah. With
and
Julie Andrews.
I haven't even seen it, actually, but it's still my favorite movie of all time.
It's not that bad, actually. Like, I watched it, and I laughed pretty hard at some spots.
Yeah, me too.
Well, it seems there's an actual genre, though, when you think about it. There's a genre for tough actor, bodybuilder types who are, like, taking care of kids. Because think about it. Kindergarten Cop.
Great movie. Film, sorry, film.
Whatever else, The Pacifier.
Daddy Daycare.
Daddy Daycare.
Are any of them tough?
Eddie Murphy is not a bodybuilder. Jeff Garland is fat, and Eddie Murphy is Eddie Murphy. Thank you very much.
I think it was
Beverly Hills Cop.
It was, listen, it was an avant-garde take on the genre.
People taking care of kids is the genre.
No,
the subgenre
the genre
is big
is,
people.
Yeah, it's tough big guys taking care of kids when they look like they can crush their tiny necks.
Okay, well, we've gotten viciously off topic, so we should probably bring it back to either. Connor, is there anything else you want to say?
I don't know. I think I'd probably need a topic before I...
What? I just, out of curiosity, what's one of your favorite news stories?
Favorite news stories? That's like really hard. That's really hard to.
One of your favorites. Script. I'm not asking for the favorite, but you know, because that's tough. Favorite,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, something covered well, or just like an example of journalism you like.
Yeah,
gotta be the sinking of the USS Maine for me.
That yellow filth. That was the beginning of yellow journalism.
Well, I don't know. I guess I could talk to you guys about a couple of things that I've done that were like really bizarre.
Yeah, do
so,
that.
So, because I read so many articles every day, you know, it's hard for me to choose. But
all right.
So I had an internship this summer up in Chicago in a suburb, and there were always these strange news stories that I just got thrown by my editor. And there was this one story about this woman's little shih tzu. She was walking it through the park, and this pit bull came up out of nowhere and just, like, ran up to the little shih tzu and started just tearing it apart in front of her. This, like, 78-year-old dog minder's face. And, like, it totally just decimated the dog. It killed it, this little tiny shih tzu and this pit bull. And so I did, like, three different stories based off of this because the first story was, like, holy shit, this poor little dog just got decimated. Like, that's newsworthy in itself. The second story was what was going to happen to the pit bull after the crime was reported. And then the third one was after the pit bull was, like, basically killed, like, killed by the Humane Society, I guess. Put down, yeah. So it's definitely, it's interesting. One of the things I like about journalism is the fact that you can have this progression of a story. Once a story is written, you don't have to just leave it at that. There's always more to say about it. So,
which is really awesome because, like, I think that's a great example of, like, it's, that's locally, like, stories play out in a local community. I mean, it is, you know, that's what would be considered a very, very minor incident in comparison to the developing stories of Syria, the developing stories of, you know, all of these that keep moving and progressing, which is, it is the coolest part of journalism. It's a long narrative. Yeah.
It's like a community focus.
That's,
go ahead, please.
Well, I was just going to say, like, that was, there's a guy that started a newspaper just in the suburb that I live in as well. Boardman News. The guy's, I'm not a fan of him. The stuff he does is not really journalism. It was just like, I have a bunch of money, I'm going to just put my opinion into stories. But one of the cool things was there was a teacher that he got removed from school. He was accused of date raping and multiple women, and he was accused of killing his wife. And, like, the school was just like, we're not going to tell anybody about this, at least until the school year's over. And, like, he caught wind of it, and he put it out there, like, I mean, that's kind of a cool thing. And it was, each week, it was, like, a follow-up on the story. And it is really cool, you know, just, like, for the community to constantly get the next step in the story.
Well, definitely, non-white people are generally marginalized in the news business, especially in the breaking news side of things. It's because in breaking news, it's just so hard to get every single perspective. But the idea of follow-up stories is that you give due justice to every single person involved in a story. I mean, generally, and it seems kind of shitty sometimes that people are given prominence just because they are this big, you know, settled white professor, you know, somebody who is the traditional news source, you know, the traditional person who is in charge of putting news out there. When in reality, it should be somebody who has been experiencing hardship in the society. It should be the Latino mom who's been working her ass off, like, you know, like maybe even like two or three jobs a day to put her kids through even just like elementary school. That's where the real story is. But it's so often it's just ignored in breaking news.
Yeah, in society just cycles and repeats itself, and it's, you have to be able to get into it and break the cycle of, like,
power structure
of white patriarchy. Yeah.
And journalism is actually a pretty decent place to start.
Yeah, I think the biggest stories that, like, I mean, obviously people for a week will talk about Miley Cyrus performing or whatever, like, that's stupid. But, like, the, well, yeah, but the thing is, what always comes up in conversations, and I think that gets the most out of people, are the stories where it is like a voice for the voiceless, like the whole Sandusky case and stuff like that, where it was people that otherwise it would have gotten blown over and stuff like that, but because somebody, you know, put it out there, it, the entire nation was talking about it.
The other issue with that, I think that's like a very good point. Obviously, it was spectacular that story broke eventually, but it's also like the morbid fascination that journalism brings is such a scary thing to me as well, because so often those stories break because they're so horrible. And are they giving voice to the voiceless, or are they pointing entirely at the perpetrator and talking, and like, not that obviously we should not, I'm not saying let's identify the victims, like that's obviously not what we should do, but also like talking about the horrors of what this man did is not you know, in the lurid details, are not enhancing a conversation on why this happened, on how this could possibly happen, which was the big story. It was like, how could this ever have happened?
I mean, I think that you're going to have some people that are going to get it wrong, and they're going to say all the gross details and stuff like that. But I mean, I also think that there are going to be respectable journalists.
Yeah, bringing it back around. Yeah, it's the news value that's the most important thing. The fact that it's always the process, too. Like, the process of how can this be allowed to happen? How can these kids be allowed to be molested? How can people keep it quiet, you know? That's always more important, I think, than just necessarily just focusing on this, like, one evil polarizing figure. Just same thing.
Off what he's done.
Yes, exactly. Same thing with the Boston Boston bombing. The idea of focusing on these guys as evil people, as people who, it's just them, you know, it's because they're evil that these people have died. When in reality, there's a very complex series of economic and social circumstances that caused them to get to this point where they felt like they weren't part of the culture. They felt like they should hate American culture. They felt like they should hate these things that they think represents American culture.
So
going, that's like the Rolling Stone article.
That yes, that's what I was gonna ask. Yes. I was gonna go, because here's the thing about the Rolling Stone article is that the idea of like what it was writing about was how these kids in an American atmosphere could be radicalized, which is to me the story of the Boston Marathon bombings in a lot of ways. Like, how did they come to feel this way? How did this come to happen? But he was on the cover of the Rolling Stone, and suddenly there's our polarizing figure, front row center, and they know they're going to get headlines from it. So, like, how do you feel? Like, that to me was like, that article was both sides of the coin. What should they have done there?
That was definitely one of the more polarizing conversations that I've had with some other journalist, was just like, so many of them said that that picture, just even just that picture on the cover, makes it seem like he's a rock star or something. But to those people who say that, I think most of them have never even read Rolling Stone before. They've never even read their feature articles, which are actually well researched, and like, they get to this point of comfort with the person they're interviewing where they just know them. They are in that person's head. And in that article, they got into his head even without even, I don't even think they got the chance to talk to him because he was in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, it was about the dead one, right? I think.
No, it was.
Okay, that's right. Okay. Well, still though, even without the availability of talking to him like specifically, he's able to develop this story about why he is the way that he is, and that's like, it's definitely important to do stories about the first responders, about the people who are injured, about the people who are affected.
Of course.
Horrific terrorist incident. But like, why did he do it? You know, like that's the question that everybody wants to know, but is kind of afraid to ask. The thing with that too is that picture was used in other news sources. It was used, I don't know if it was in the New York Times, but
yeah, no, it was right. It was where it was. Like, that was entirely the issue, was that it was on the Rolling Stone. But I guess my feeling is, if there was any reason to say, firstly, I think the press should be allowed to do what they want, but if there's anything, it was I am annoyed that they wrote an article that was about, you know, the right thing of like, how could this happen, you know, and about the larger questions, but yet we still put the larger questions into one face, into one image that could be interpreted a lot of different ways, and into one image they know they knew would be inflammatory.
Yeah, but then the other question becomes, what would you use in place of it? You know, would you just use another fucking picture of Bob Dylan, or would you do the centerpiece of your
right
magazine,
yeah,
you know, would you use this beautiful story that was well researched and well thought out, and a question that needed to be answered.
Yeah. And certainly not his bloodied face. Like, that's not what I think it should have been. Yeah, shouldn't have been him sitting there defeated, which was something that we saw. And you know, the Boston skyline was probably a cop-out as well. But, like, but you're just, it's, again, it's the putting it in the focus of one person. It's in encapsulating big stories in one face that is so dangerous, in my mind.
It's, anytime you polarize something, it's very dangerous. And I agree with you. But then I think the discussion becomes, maybe it's a problem with the way that we're marketing things. Maybe it's a problem with the idea of front-loading a publication with just this big loaded image of this huge thing on the cover with, like, little bits of information. Like, oh, hey, look at this guy, but also 10 ways to, I don't know, like, grow stuff in your backyard and feed your family.
I think he's talking about his weed that he's grown.
Yeah.
We all know what you're talking about.
The Rolling Stone pot week.
Well, Connor, I mean, I think we've done a lot. How deep are we into this podcast? Hour 10.
Covered a lot of ground.
Yeah. So I think, you can feel free to go. You can feel free to stay.
Take a little bit of time to explore each other's bodies a little bit more?
Well, that's going to be a visual joke / orgy, not good for an audio format.
Not good radio.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't make good radio. It doesn't make good radio at all. All
right, well, I'll see you around, dude.
Can I have your fries?
Yeah, can we have your fries?
Nice. Yes,
we got Connor's fries.
Thank you for coming by.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming, Connor.
Thanks, guys. I had a really great time.
We did too.
All right, go drink more.
Yeah.
All right, man. See
you.
Bye.
Good fries.
USD always has great fries. Yeah. Get the burger.
Oh, he's coming back.
Too much salt. Oh, you can go up and ask them. They'll be cool.
They'll be cool. Be cool, man. Be cool.
Just tell them I sent you. Just tell them Taylor said it's cool. Oh, man. A lot of great topics. Hannah and I both started out here as journalism majors. Matt, if I'm not mistaken, you were also considering it.
I started out as, like, a news writing journalism major, but I switched over to PR and advertising.
Right.
Which is kind of seen as a dark side of American culture.
Yes. Our honors tutorial college director would definitely, hate you.
I mean, to that I say, haters gonna hate.
Haters gonna hate.
Don't generalize me because you don't know what I want to go into. Maybe I want to. What?
I was saying I have a brother who was a sports writer for an actual, you know, newspaper and stuff for 10+ years, something like that. And then when, you know, they laid people off and stuff like that, now he does PR and marketing and stuff like that.
Well,
and
you know, I mean,
from what I mean, it's not exactly what he wanted to be doing, but, like, the skills transfer a lot, and there's a lot of the same people in the
You
can do PR without being a spin doctor. Like,
you don't have. I mean, that's the thing, is it's like, oh, I'm in advertising. It's like, oh yeah, you're probably pouring alcohol down girls' cleavages, and it's like, no, that's not what I'm doing. Ideally, I would like to.
That's just him on the weekend. No,
actually, yeah. And beyond that, the plural of cleavage is cleavi. So not
no,
cleavages.
I knew
there's
a buddy.
No way it's Clevi.
My buddy's name is Clevi.
Clevi Strauss.
But, like, I wouldn't want to do that. I would like to work for, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll figure that out down the road, but I wouldn't want to be doing something where it's
Wait a minute. You're a college student who doesn't have it all figured out.
Yeah,
come on. Get it together.
What's wrong
with
you?
That's the one time I was playing a game with my brothers via internet. We had our headsets on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing with some of their other friends, and they were like, so how's school going? And then one of their friends chirped in and goes, wait a second, let me guess. I'm 18 years old. I don't know what to do with my life. And I was like, yep, pretty much. I have a general direction, you know.
I'm 21.
One direction.
I don't know. Yeah.
One direction.
Uh-huh.
Go.
So, yeah, you want to be a member of One Direction.
That'd be nice.
That would be nice.
You got the pipes for it, kid.
Oh, man. Yeah. We heard you sing that, Whitney, at the beginning of
this. I've been working on Pavarotti sings children's tunes.
Oh, wow.
Beautiful. Horrifying.
You guys will hear the first of it.
On top of spaghetti.
That's that's just a taste of it. So take with that what you will.
So tasty.
On top of spaghetti, was that something you wrote to the tune of On Top of Old Smokey yourself? What? Or is that an actual
On top
song?
Of spaghetti, all covered in cheese. I lost my poor meatball when somebody sneezed.
That's what?
If you not...
Never.
Did you never...
Childhood?
Did you do ta ta ti ti ta ti ta ta? Was I the only one that had that?
No, I did that in music.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
What else did Connor talk about the weekend? I mean, we covered a lot of things pretty exhaustively.
Journalism.
It was a good... That's a good conversation, you know? That's what I like about Diner Night.
Diner Night, yeah. Diner Night has fun ones.
Ethics of journalism. It's all a gray area, especially how it transfers over. And so it's like, it's cool. Because, like, no matter what, you're going to have contrasting opinions about something.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Yeah. And to a lot of an extent, I disagree with plenty of what he said, especially in regards to the cursing and whatnot. Like, I feel like this idea of the cool journalist is problematic to me.
Why don't you say that to his face, bitch?
No, I'm not going
to. I'm kidding.
To attack him when he's gone.
I'm not attacking him. I just disagree.
Hey, Connor, get back.
I like Speakeasy, especially that piece about the Athens Scanner was glorious. They also did, I think Speakeasy also did the guy with the hot tub and the fucking DeLorean. Fuck that guy. I hope you're listening, guy. I hate you. You ruined my friend's experience with the DeLorean, and I hate you. But yeah, they've done really, really great pieces, and had pieces with a lot of really good voice. But there's also, I mean, you know, it also that AV Club stuff is so like authoritative when they're just culture critics, like that's all they are. But yet, no, they're the smartest culture critics alive.
Well, I think a lot of the problem with using curse words too is that it's kind of a cop out. It let you not have to explain yourself as well, because you just say fucking this, fucking that,
yeah,
fucking fuck.
You started off so sincere; it was like a child. Like the problem with curse words is
he doesn't let me say them at home.
It was very, very decorable, very decorable.
Yeah, but you can. I mean, when I am struggling for things to say, you just. You know, you go to those backup words, which are fuck and goddamn and Christ shine.
When it
Christ shine?
I mean, some people could take it offensively, I guess.
You're just glowing today. You've got that Christ shine.
What'd you say to me? No, I mean, I think I agree with that wholeheartedly. But I also think that there is a time and place for a good. But yeah, is journalism necessary? Honestly, if you can like, if you can get it in the right spot, like a swear word, it's one of the like. There's no other place for it, you know. Like that, it adds so much to it. But I don't know.
Journalism's a place of like a lot of self-indulgence, though. Like the issue is that you're always going to run into these people who are going to use these things as crutches. It's the same. I mean, it's the same with anything that you do. Is that like. Everything's good when used right, but like so many of these techniques are taken by people who take them too far or rely on them, and that's the issue.
Oh, yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about like a right or wrong thing. It's just
absolutely.
Are you doing it well?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the big thing. And Speakeasy has had pieces that have been done very well, and Speakeasy's had some pieces that have not been done well.
I mean, and it is all subjective. Go ahead.
That kind of reminds me of the are you using it well or not well? It kind of reminds me of the talking funny, the Ricky Gervais interview with Seinfeld and Chris Rock and Louis C.K., where Seinfeld talks about how originally he had this joke that he had the word fuck in it, and then he was wondering if it was getting laughs because he said fuck or because of the joke, and he decided to take it out, and it didn't get the same amount of laughs. And it was partly, things like a timing thing, but also partly, like, people were just laughing at fuck, and he said it was, like, too... easy, like that wasn't the joke. And
I listened to that and I understand where he's coming from with that, but also at the same time, I mean, how he does his material now, I'm just assuming that all of his stuff didn't include swear words in it throughout the entire thing. So like when he would say fuck, it would be because, like, that's, like, the angriest he's been, and it's over something stupid. And I think that's a funny concept, is, like, he's getting upset.
Like, now, if you see, like, if Jim Gaffigan all of a sudden said fuck really loudly on there,
I mean,
like,
when
Brian
him or John
Regan
Mulaney,
or
yeah, when they say, they use swear words very sparingly, but when they do, I'm not going, oh, he couldn't think of a punchline,
right.
That's why
this
is funny.
Right. Well, I think also, like, so much of journalism as well is about understanding the style of what you're reading. And that's, like, that's why I think there should be media literacy classes, because they should tell you, like, what to look for, like, where, you know, not obviously not what biases are, because I've heard, hi there. Thank you.
The
very
check
much.
Is
the checks,
laid down.
The checks.
Thank you very
the
much.
Checks have come.
Yep. Thank you very much.
But, like, part of, like, I've heard people say the Columbus Dispatch is very conservative, and I've heard people say it's very liberal. Not to say that it's balanced. I think it is absolutely conservative. But, like, you know, biases are interpreted in various ways. But the different strategies of crafting an article, different publications use different ones, and, like, knowing them and then saying to people, hey, look for the tendency of what this publication shows. Like, that's all very, very important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that you won't understand till it happens to you. But I got the price of my bill, and it is $330, and the area code of my hometown is 330.
Wow!
So I feel very
That's
happy.
Awesome. I actually am that happy.
Not a lot of $5.13 bills.
That's what I'm
saying.
Well, there's not like a lot of 330 things that you get.
Yeah, $6.14 is rare as well. Yep, I've gotten 614. I've smiled as well.
See, it's like
a smile was real. Yes,
I was so
genuine.
Happy.
Very genuine.
I like Youngstown, kind of.
So here's a thing. I mentioned that I have laser skates now. Dan Aarons has given me laser skates. Hannah, you read laser skates, correct? No. Hannah's never read laser skates either.
Well, that's happening
soon,
very soon.
After the Athens Open mic this week, we're gonna do a reading of laser skates.
Yes.
But, like, I said, I have laser skates, and Joe Skirm and Emily Harper and Ryan Gabus yelled, yes! And everybody else was
laser
like, what?
Skates?
And it was like, and there were like 8 people, I think there were 8 to 10 people in there who just like looked around like, what is this? And I was like, you're going to find out. It was just the best thing that
see,
laser
that's, that's great. When you get stuff, some, you know, like little things like that, that you can keep passing on and keep people in the, in the Blue Pencil and OU Improv communities and stuff like that, just keep these running.
Right. Well,
like,
laser skates, by the way,
in jokes going.
Horrifying screenplay written and
Oscar worthy
person. We don't know who.
Who
it
has,
I don't know who this
long
was,
is long so. Since departed Athens. I believe. Like even
he
when I heard, even when I first heard laser skates, like our freshman year, he was already gone.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't there anymore.
Yeah, so
and
he
so
graduated
he is
before.
We're assuming
earlier.
He graduated.
Okay, well, he's
maybe not.
Yeah. Well, at any rate, so
he's probably living a big in Hollywood with how great this screenplay is.
He was asked to make a screenplay that could be easily produced in Athens, and it starts out with a man jumping out of a helicopter and skipping like a rock on the ocean and coming to a halt on like a beach and going like, ugh, what a ride. Like, it is insane. I firmly expect everyone to be offended.
Or maybe just say nice tits.
There's one really long line and then in parentheses, or maybe
just
say
nice
tits. It's horrifying. Yeah. It's so great, though.
Oh, man.
Well, now that I know what I'm doing this Saturday night.
Yeah. It's homecoming. Might as well go to the alumni.
Yeah.
So it's very funny. But, it is.
We got to try to get some people in for that.
Blue Pencil. Figuring out Blue Pencil, and I know Hannah's facing the same challenge, and you are too, Ryan, being, you know, in charge of improv. Like, it's very weird to start talking about, like, history versus the now, and, like, to what extent are we curators of that, especially since I think both of our organizations, you know, we're the first generation of the organization that, like, had a like, followed a nucleus of people. Because, like, I don't think OU Improv, like, when we saw it when we were freshmen, they were still in their, like, group forming process.
Yes.
Jesse and Kat were both in the beginning, right?
I don't know if Kat... I think Kat joined the same time everyone in 60 Minute did. Oh. Jesse and Emily Hemler was... Emily Hemler was there. I think she's been there the longest. Well, Not obviously not anymore, but like as of when last year started, she had been there the longest of anybody.
Yeah, and Blue Pencil Kamikaze Comedy was founded by Eudora and Dan and that original group of people. So yeah, it's this really weird thing of like we now are the first people to be like to grab a new group of people and say this is what came before us and this is what we've learned. And it feels weird. Like it feels like a lot of times I feel like I have to like watch myself to make sure I'm not condescending, because like so Eudora always said like, oh yeah, whenever I spoke from a position of authority, like it might as well have been my first meeting too, like I didn't know what I was doing. She had said that on a podcast with me, which is really awesome and very funny to me. But now like everything I say comes from this group of people that imparted it to me, and so it's like, you know, I don't want people to think that I know everything. I just had this, you know, large group of people that helped so much. Which was, yeah. So, like, it's this weird thing. And, like, you guys, Matt and your group, you can't know what was given to me from them and what is my own thought. And, like, you know, how innovating that while also imparting the fact that we, I don't know what we're talking about. It's just a very strange thing. It's a very strange thing to be in the middle of, I guess.
Yeah, it is being in the middle because, I mean, I wasn't close friends with really any of my influences other than Dan, I think. So I just like saw them as influences, and now they're kind of just like when they come back, like when Zach comes back, it's like, oh, that's Zach Coleman. He was here at some point. And I'm like, no, he was like here for me. Like he was the one who made me do stand up and made me try harder at Fridays Live. And so it's, they have this, any sort of reputation that anybody has, like everybody is a person, but it's just, it's funny what stays in Athens of somebody's reputation after they've left publicly, and then what everybody has privately.
Right. Well, yeah, and it's going to be less by the year too, because like the freshmen who've come in this year to do stand up, like we've had a couple people who look like they're sticking around. Christian Power, Allie Keen, Allie Keen, of course, that's a strange pronunciation. Allie Keen, we've got
Tom Wade,
a bunch of other ones. Yeah, Tom Wade and
Chase Goodwin.
And Chase Goodwin, of course, yeah. And so, like, all those people.
Are you listening?
Are you listening, guys? I didn't forget any of you. But they will not ever think of Zach Coleman as anything more than just a person. And
Spilled grape drink on his shirt at a party once.
Well, yeah, and I mean, like, they'll see him do it, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, he's fine. And they won't get, like, what we get, which is, like, this guy. And I remember, the moment I remember most of Zach was when he, because he had done, like, a really monotone delivery, and he switched up to, like, a really storytelling animated delivery. And I was like, holy shit, next step, blew my mind. And, like, so, like, so much of that is, every time I watch him do it, I'm also brought back to that moment. So, like, eventually, you know, Zach will have nobody here that has any idea who he was, and like that extends to us as well. Like eventually that does not matter. Anonymity, it's crushing. I'm not worried about it, I guess.
They'll
I don't
know my name.
Do you find it really difficult trying to put yourself in a leadership position now, all of you being in some sort of power?
Yes.
Like with my position, like, my direct predecessor was Travis Corey. And, like, I feel like when I'm giving, if I'm giving, like, notes to, like, the newer people, I feel like I belong or whatever. Like, yeah, like, this makes sense that I'm in this position. And then when I try to do, like, anything, I don't give notes really to, like, other, like, fellow black sheepers and stuff like that. But I feel like if I did, it would be the whole time, like, in the back of my mind, like, we're all on the same page that, like, I don't know what I'm talking about as much as Travis did. Like, he could give notes to us, but, like,
right.
I can't give notes the same way that
the
he
person
did.
Who starts as the authority is the authority, and even if it's, like, Eudora, who said the only reason she was in charge was that she had done stand-up before, and it was in the mythical New York City where she had done an open mic, and that was why she was no, like that was why they put her in charge. She was like, that's not. And obviously Eudora's organizationally great. She was very good at her job. But like, that is the like, that's the precedent for your power is like something very trivial. And yet it grows. And that is very funny. Yeah, it's weird for me to give anybody feedback as well. I think what's harder though is like trying to fit. So like comedy is very scary for everybody. Comedy is this really terrifying thing, and not getting laughs is the worst. And you start looking around, you start like the easy thing to do, especially when you're starting out, is to resent everyone around you who is getting laughs while you're not. Or just like the people who are telling you to do something differently. And so like what I hate about stand up, and you guys don't really have this as much since you have, you know, since you are a collective, but like when I'm telling freshmen to, hey, change this, like I get very nervous that they're like, okay, well, fuck you. And like, I do think that there's a good amount of people who's like, we are prime targets for people's inferiority complexes, which like I treated a lot of the veterans that I didn't care for as much when I was a freshman. I was like, well, you know what? Fuck them. They don't have any idea what's going on. I hate them. They're bad at it. They're not as good as they think they are. And it was totally just my inferiority complex pointed to the person in power. And like, I can see people treating me like that this year. And that's probably the worst part about it.
I mean, I think that's just down to, I mean, we've had past conversations where you said freshman year you were very narcissistic.
Yeah.
And so that might have been your outlet. But I mean, I know last year I never the fists are coming out.
No, I'm saying that it's still today.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, that's a given. We put everything
everybody
out.
Everybody is.
Yeah.
No, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know, but I mean, like, I'm saying, like, but well, now you're, obviously, you're able to take a critique.
Yeah.
And not
well,
say,
yeah, we learn, yeah.
You know what I mean.
There's still, but even, like, I'm definitely there, like, I feel like we started in a similar, with a similar mindsets, and we've both grown a lot, and like, yeah, it's a lot easier to take critiques now and like see what people have, but still, like, my knee jerk reaction whenever I get someone giving me a critique is, oh, fuck you, I made that decision for a reason, like,
right.
With anything,
defense.
That's, and then
it's
I'm
defense.
Like, whoa, wait a minute, like,
yeah,
this person has a completely different experience, they saw from the outside, and they, you know, they saw this didn't work, this could have worked better, or something like that. I should really take that into account, but still, anytime something like that comes up, the knee-jerk response is just like, fuck that, I know what's best. Like, I've been doing this too. I know,
right.
I know what's happening.
I mean, and there were some moments where it, I mean, this year and last year, that was like my mentality for some of them. But also last year, I remember I was very like, shit, I got critiqued on this. It's probably because I'm messing up on this and I don't understand this. And like, it wasn't I'm directing it towards anyone else. It was just like, I was directing it right back towards myself where it was just like, yeah, you're fucking up big time and stuff like that. Not they're fucking up. Mm. So, I mean, I guess it's critiques don't always necessarily work in some way.
Oh, yeah. I guess I really do think that, like, when we come into this, we do come in with an inferiority complex because there are these positions of power that people have over us. And the position of power is generally like, listen, I've been doing this for 3 years. All right. I've made this mistake before. Like, it's all every bit of insight that I have over another comic is probably experience based because I've been on stage more than you and I fucked that up worse than you, most likely. Like, that's probably why I'm giving you this critique, is because I tried exactly what you did and it went very poorly. And so trying to impart that to people without them feeling like, oh, he's just saying this because he's better than me. Like, that's the thing that I'm still having trouble doing. And that's the thing that I didn't have to, because we all started with a group that was like improv started. We all were watching them in a classroom that didn't fill up. And then it moved to the Baker Theater with you guys. You were all a part of it when it did. And we all were in the front room together with just our friends doing stand up. And then it moved outward. So like, I'm the first person that's like, okay, I'm in charge of this when it's going well, you know what I mean? And so like, that's where I feel like I feel like people can take that as like I'm lording over them, and I don't want to be. I think everyone's good and they're going to get better each time they go up. So yeah, it's just, it's rough. It's the worst part about being the leader of this group in this position.
I was just saying, like, when you brought up about like, yeah, the first, both of us, like, we're all, both organizations are in the position where, like, we're doing better than we have been. Not maybe not in terms of content, but at least in terms of, like, audience size and stuff like
that.
I know I've been this year a lot more, like, conscious and worried about, like, this, how many people are coming to our shows than I was last year. Because it was like, everyone's gone. We can't fuck this up and lose everything that they helped, like that they helped build. Like, we can't come back this year and then, you know, not fill the theater, you know, have half attendance and stuff like that.
But it's also still my inferiority complex of, like, they're not better than me. I can keep this going. I can do this. Like,
yeah,
it's
a drive.
Also, it feels, yeah, no, it feels, it definitely feels like a personal defeat if I can't keep it going as well. Like, it not only do I feel awful for, like, squandering the contributions of unbelievable people that I really respect, but also I want to respect myself as much as I respect them, and that you know, there are metrics to figure that out a little bit, I guess.
I think it's important to remember too that we are all very young, but also, like, the same age, you know what I mean?
Right.
Well, that's
like, we are, we do not have any authority, and they didn't have any authority. We're just kind of flailing around here. This is some, why did this work here? Why did this work in Athens? Why is it continuing to work? I don't understand. Are we good in the context of the world?
Yeah, there's no real way of knowing.
That was a I don't know sound. That you made.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. Like, I think, especially this year, I've been going to more stand-up meetings than I did last year. And, like, I just get it. Like, there's a very good sense of self-awareness of, like, yep, I know you, Joe, is just like, yep, we're college kids. We happen to be seniors. We've been doing this for a while. But, like, no matter what, you're still saying, this is the advice that I would want to give you, but you're also free to fail if you want. Like, not like you're going to fail, even, but, like, no matter what you do, it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
It's all, like, a good environment, and we just want people to learn from it because we're learning, too.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a big motto that Blue Pencil's holding right now.
I gave Katie a suggestion on moving. Katie Ross, we did a show last Friday at Casa.
I gave Katie Ross a suggestion on moving out of Athens.
I gave Katie a suggestion on extending a joke and not ending on the punchline she did, because I didn't think it was a good enough end. She took it on Casa, ended it where she ended it, did not listen to me, and it went super, super well. So, like, that's, I mean, I don't.
It's a comfortable time.
There are things that I've, there are suggestions I've given that people have taken and killed with, and I'm like, yeah. And then there are suggestions I've given that are not good.
That's true. Thinking about it, when suggestions were given my freshman year, that you shouldn't go on stage without taking that suggestion.
Right.
Like, if you go on stage without taking that suggestion, you're going to fail. And,
yeah.
And it's going to be all your fault.
But also, sometimes that suggestion was just Zach making a fart joke that he thought was funny. Like,
maybe you should end with just, like, going into the microphone.
But no, sometimes we just do bits on other people's jokes. Sometimes it is just, like, we're doing a riff. And, like, don't take this riff on stage.
Oh. Yeah.
But, yeah, it's hard to clarify that. And sometimes then great punchlines come out of that riff. I know Joe has, like, especially his Toy Story joke, he credits, I think, Winfrey and Kaz for two of the different punchlines that come through that joke. And that was awesome. I don't know.
And
it's
Aaron's head. Like, the first time I had somebody, like, give me, like, a legitimate critique thing was after a Jackie O's show. I had my old set of, like, mustaches and all that jazz. And I had done it, like, at the time there, I had done it probably, like, off and on for, like, 4 months and hadn't changed a thing since I started. And Dan Aaron's, like, right after I get off stage, gives me two suggestions on, like, just really small changes, but made the entire set just, like, for me, changed everything. And I was pissed because I had just gotten it filmed for the second time or something. I was going to put this one up because it was the best one yet. And I was like, God damn it. Now I want to go up and perform it again with these tweaks, because this is definitely the best.
Right. I think we're coming well to the end of this podcast. We're hitting about 2 hours. Thank you for listening. God bless America. And we'll see you next week.
That is the abrupt ending to Diner Night Episode 3. We forgot to say our names, probably due to the crippling fatigue and technical delays that plagued this episode of Diner Night. But nevertheless, thank you so much to guest host Ryan Priestley and guest Connor Morris for their insightful conversations. And thanks, as always, to Union Street Diner for housing conversations that are a ton of fun to have. See you next week.